Welcome back to another episode of Recruitment Journeys with me, Pete Watson from Mint R2R, Australia's longest serving rec to rec. Unapologetic plug there, completely shameless. Recruitment Journeys is the original and longest running podcast dedicated to you, the Australian recruitment industry. And in this podcast, as ever, we chat to hand-selected recruitment identities about the highs and the lows of their particular recruitment journeys in the hope to educate, inspire, and motivate you, our listeners. Now, please remember, on the off chance that you've listened to one of these episodes and indeed enjoyed it, it would be massively appreciated if you could like, share, or subscribe, or ideally, all three. We don't ask for much at Recruitment Journeys, just a little bit of love. Massive thanks to our sponsors, A Positive Finance. Everything you need to start or scale your recruitment business. Right, that's enough of the intros. It's all taken care of. Let's get into the next episode of Recruitment Journeys. For most recruiters, starting one recruitment firm is a giant leap of faith. So imagine starting three or four. That's just huge. And that's exactly what serial recruitment entrepreneur David DJ Jackson has done over his 20-year recruitment career. And that's not including the ones that maybe haven't been quite so successful. Dave himself doesn't like the word entrepreneur. He says it's all a little bit too cringe. But like it or not, that's exactly what he is. He is, without question, a man who takes risks and turns opportunities and dreams into business realities. And that's been proven once again, most recently, when DJ has completely reinvented himself as a brewer extraordinaire of non-alcoholic, award-winning beer, Beneficial Beer. This podcast is a roller coaster ride. Hope you can keep up. David Jackson from the Escort Group. Good morning, mate. How are you?
I'm very well. Thanks, Peter.
Mate, I nearly introduced you as, I know you're in my phone as Dave Jackson from S2M, but Dave Jackson from S2M is just a small part of who you are, right, mate? You got fingers Correct. In many pies. How are you?
I'm very well, Pete. I'm good. It's raining up here in Brisbane today, but nice and warm.
Good man. Well, look, I know you're a busy bloke, so I really appreciate you being here today and carving out some time in your empire to have a chat with us. Dave, this is actually the second time that you've been on Recruitment Journeys. You came on a few years ago now onto one of our, it was quite a popular podcast at the time. We got seven recruiters together and we talked about, you know, the whole concept of recruiters who don't drink. We're going to come on to that later. But the point is, this is the second time you've been here.
Thanks for having me back, Pete.
Mate, no, thank you. Mate, you're grammable, as they say. Have you heard that phrase, grammable?
No, but next question.
it means you're good for content. But mate, just in case you haven't listened to any podcasts between then and now, I'm going to quickly explain what Recruitment Journeys is. So we are the original podcast dedicated to the Australian recruitment industry. We've been kicking around for 3-4 years. And what we do, we hand select chosen identities from the recruitment industry. People who've got a story to tell, right? So people who've got something really interesting about the career path and the career journey that they've chosen. And the whole point is to inspire, educate, and motivate people that might listen to David Jackson's story and go, cool, that resonates with me. I'm going to try and apply that to my life, apply that to my career. So mate, yeah, we're going to talk about all things recruitment and all the other bits to the left and to the right. But we start with a bit of an icebreaker, if you don't mind, Dave. As a rec to rec, I've come to learn over the years, over the decades, that not many people, in fact, nobody grows up wanting to be a recruiter. And I'm sure the same applies to you. What did you want to be, mate, growing up?
Well, I think I wanted to be a few things, but if you look back at it, when I was younger, sort of, you know, early high school, I used to go to my uncle's farm in the school holidays, and I wanted to be a farmer. I wanted to drive the four-wheel drive. I wanted to muster the sheep. I wanted to ride the motorbikes. I wanted to get in the shearing sheds. And so, yeah, I was keen to be a farmer. It quickly persuaded me that there was no money to be made in farming, David, far too hard. And then towards the end of school, I wanted to be a photographer. Everybody wants to be a photographer, don't they? And a mate of mine, we both sort of got cameras and started shooting all sorts of different, photography. But Cameron Bloom went into underwater photography and became a famous surf photographer. And he now is one of Australia's famous photographers. So good on him. But, you know, I left school and didn't know what I wanted to do.
Right. Okay. So you're probably one of a million recruiters who fell into the game, but we'll come to that. We'll come to that later.
Yeah.
Can't see you as a farmer, mate. I can't. Now you've got the gruff kind of farmer's voice. I can imagine you like sitting on the back of a horse screaming at sheep, but I can't imagine you getting your hands too dirty.
Wait and see, Pete. there's still time for me to be a farmer.
There's still time. Mate, tell us something about David Jackson that not many people know.
Tell you something about that not many people know about me. Well, not many people know that I spent 11 days in the Atlantic Ocean on a 50-foot yacht with one other person struggling to get from the Azores to Gibraltar in a howling southerly massive waves. Stuck in the busiest sea lane in the world as a 25-year-old who'd never really sailed in the ocean before. So I
Why?
Think
were you lost, or was that some kind of expedition?
No, it was an opportunity to sail a yacht from the Azores to Gibraltar. It was normally a 4-day journey. I was going to get paid $1,000 to do it. Apparently, the skipper had told me we were going to pick up some backpackers in the Azores, so there'd be 4 or 6 of us. It'd be an easy sail. Away we go. So we get out literally 2 hours into the journey out of the port, out of the Azores, and he's looked at me going, "You don't know how to sail, do you?" I said, "Well, mate, my brother sailed Brindabella for a few years, and I sailed it in the harbour with a crew of 22. So, no, I've never really sailed across the Atlantic before." Anyway, the next day this storm hit, and we just had to hove to for about 3 days. And then the wind was coming from the exact same direction, 055, that is when you sail from the Azores to Gibraltar. Yeah. And we're in this 60 or 50-foot yacht that was handmade by this guy who'd passed away, and it was a real pig. So it would, to go into the wind was really hard. So we were just sailing like this. It took us 11 days. We took on water. The engine broke. The auto steering broke. The lights broke. The only thing that did not break on this boat was the hull and the sails. Otherwise, you know, I'm not sure where we would have been. So, yeah, not too many people know about that one, but that was all a good learning lesson. There was lots of lessons. Yeah.
At any point, did the more experienced captain of the boat, did he turn around and say, "Right, DJ, this is it, lad. We're going to meet our maker." Or hang on, what is it? We're going to go down to Davy's locker.
No, he was super confident the whole time.
Really?
And he was absolutely fine with it. But I mean, like we were doing 4 hours on, 4 hours off. He'd go down for sleep. I'd come up and steer. I'd go down for sleep. He'd come up. But no, mate, he was an Aussie yachty through and through, super confident, knew what he was doing. You know, I mean, he had his hands in the septic tank trying to plug the hole where we were taking the water on for like a day. And he inspired the confidence in me just to get through it, right? But I'll never forget lying in the bow of the boat, just listening to the storm and going up and down these waves, just thinking, what happens if a tanker just hits us? Like, what am I going to do? He never slept in the bow. He slept at the rear of the boat with the steps where he could get out quickly. Like, I had no idea. Anyway, lots of lessons learned there, Pete, but I still enjoy sailing, mate.
Yeah, okay. I was going maybe subconsciously, you know, you set foot again on terra firma and you thought, right, I'm going to grab life with both hands based on what I've just been through.
Well,
I
got that $1,000 cash and went straight to a camera shop and bought myself a camera.
Is that right? Yeah, okay. There you go. Okay, so the sailing career didn't exactly take off. The photography career didn't take off, but you did, like many of us before you and after you, found yourself in the wonderful world of recruitment. How and why did you break into the wonderful world of recruitment?
Yeah, so why? Because I was, I'd finished that sailing trip. I was in London. I ran into my ex-girlfriend from university. she was like, you're 27 years of age. What are you doing? You've never really had a job, have you? And I'm like, well, yeah, I had filming people underwater on a dive boat, and I managed some bands, and we created a show called Hellrose Place, and we sold that to Channel 10. And she's like, yeah, but you've never worked for someone. You don't really. I'm like, no. She's like, well, you need to get a job, and you probably want to go back to Sydney and get a job in sales. And she said, you know, Damo got that job in recruitment, and he did it for a year, and he assessed the market, and then he ended up lobbing into a job as a marketing director for this, and look where he is now. So I was like, okay, cool, right, that was it. So I flew back to Sydney, grabbed the Sydney Morning Herald. This is sort of like December 2000, you know, many years ago, and then just scanned it. And the first ad I saw was for Parker Bridge. Come and work with Parker Bridge, English recruitment company, opened office in Australia, you know, tried, and it was, this is how they used to write their ads, which, you know, we all should still do that in recruitment, is, you know, try to get yourself an interview, ring Steve Hamlin and try to get yourself an interview. So
really?
Yeah, that's how I... That's what made me, that's why I got into recruitment. I think, did you ask how I got into recruitment or?
Yeah, how and why?
I got into recruitment is because the ex-girlfriend told me I needed a job at 28. And then how is because I met Steve Hamlin, did a 3.5-hour interview with him, and they employed me on the spot. And then I left the office and I had to ring him back the next morning and go, Steve, I actually can't start next week. I'm supposed to be going sailing with my brother. And the funny thing is, Steve, you know how Mike Hewitt had that screensaver of Anna Kournikova on his laptop? Steve's like, yeah. I said, well, we're taking Anna Kournikova out on the yacht. So I'm sure Mike won't mind if I get some photographs and an autograph and stuff when I come back and start work for him, will he? And he just laughed and went, mate, just come back in a week's time. You'll be fine. Like, I'm a 28-year-old guy, mature guy. Steve was interviewing all these 22, 23-year-old people. And I, so, you know, and as they say, Pete, the rest is history.
The rest is history, mate. My
2-year stint with Parker Bridge, but it set me up, right?
Yeah. So it was a 2-year stint, and you know, if you look at your LinkedIn profile, which is it's a very busy read, right? There's a lot on there about all the things that you've been involved in over the years, but clearly you used that 2-year experience to elevate into your first recruitment enterprise. But just very quick little interlude, mate. I'll share a secret with you. You probably won't know this. I don't think we've ever spoken about this, but I actually worked at Parker Bridge very, very briefly at the same time as you. Can you remember that? You remember me?
But in England or Australia?
No, mate, in Australia.
In Sydney?
Yeah, man. I remember you because you were difficult to forget. And you were sat alongside, oh, forget the Ian Innard was a rookie.
And Mike,
yeah, all those. Yeah. Yeah, and you boys were on fire. I was in the technology team, and quite frankly, it wasn't the right job for me. And yeah, hands up, I didn't last very long. But I remember you, mate. I remember watching you from afar.
Yeah, it was a good learning ground, Parker Bridge. Very good, sensational, yeah. Sensational. I mean, but you know, Steve and I created the training manual that then went on to build such a huge business. Like at the end of the day, and not only that, but the people that came out of Parker Bridge, yeah, you can list them all: Dave McKillop, you know, yeah. Ian Innard, Brad Hart, myself. And then there'd be a whole swathe of others that have gone on to start their own businesses since then. But you know,
yeah,
it was fun times.
It was a thriving, noisy, busy, successful, classic old school, you know, recruitment environment. It was wonderful. Now then, mate. Okay, cool. So you sat in recruitment as an employee for only 2 years before you went off and did your own thing, which is relatively rare. Some people do it, but most people, you know, do 10, 15 years in the corporate. Before they have the ball to go and do it. That wasn't obviously your plan. And you now, can we just list the amount or the number of recruitment agencies that you are somehow involved in today? Because there's a few, right?
Yeah. So basically I a bit of a potted history that'll get to answering that question. Left Parker Bridge, but I didn't want to leave Parker Bridge. They'd offered me an opportunity of equity, and I've still got the paper ad that says, you know, ring Steve Hamlin, get yourself an interview. There's an opportunity to travel, opportunity for equity.
Okay.
What happened was Mike found me difficult to work with. Obviously, he was wanted the bigger piece of the equity. He just said to Steve, I can't work with DJ. So Steve offered me equity, said, I'll back you into your own business. I went off and started a business called Global Job Network. We then went into SARS and the September 11, and I created a national brand called Global Job Network, which did a deal with the Backpacker Travel Center. I had like 40 backpacking shops across the country. We were doing the recruitment out of all those backpacker shops. But then when the travel industry shut down, that business folded. At the same time, I had a lot of executive stuff happening on the side with the University Co-op Bookshop. So I just went on and did my own thing as a one-man band. Found it really hard and worked out. There's no way and I'll go to Brad Hart and say, Brad, look at your business. You know, he had three or four brands under Hart Recruiting. I'm like, mate, here we are. Come on. He's like, nothing happened with Brad. So, but what Brad did do was he introduced me to Samantha Watts and we went to the Seek Ball and I fell in love with Sam. And then Sam was like, I'm going to do a recruitment business. And I'm like, great, you should do a recruitment business. I'd gone back to Parker Bridge to help Ian Innard set up Parramatta, set up the Chatswood office. So yeah. I was in and out there. Mike Hewitt brought me back into the game. So God bless Mike, right? And he knew I was mature and was a gun. So I came in, helped them open that Parramatta office. And then Sam was tapping me going, I'm going to start my own business. And I'm like, yeah, you should. And maybe I could help at some stage. And that's when on the lounge room floor, we conceived the idea of S2M Digital. So yeah. That was the beginning of what you can see now is the Escor Group, which has four businesses within it. The main primary business was S2M Digital. I then started ASR Recruitment, which is a generalist recruitment company in Newcastle that's doing quite well. We also then, I pivoted out of recruitment into IT services because I wanted to build an IT contractor book and I could never do that in digital. We just never could crack it in digital. So IT services is DSI and we've got the S2M business as well. How many businesses have I had in recruitment? Well, there was another IT recruitment company called S2P Technology. Came into COVID and that shut down. And we just rolled that into S2M. We've got a couple of tech recruiters within S2M that have been with us. But, that S2M digital brand is really, it's the one of the first and longest in the digital space. And we do a mix between digital and media, but mainly media marketing and sales.
Yeah. It was to my knowledge, I've been doing Rec2Rec in Australia for almost 20 years. It was one of the first businesses that I remember identifying as a pure digital recruitment, as a specialist digital recruitment company. There's a few now, but S2M was one of the first, right?
Yeah, well, we started it with Sam's girlfriend coming up with the name S2M, sales to marketing, because Sam was a sales and marketing recruiter. So that was great. And then when we quickly got a tap, Sam got a tap on the door from News Limited and said, can you help me build this digital sales team? I just said, okay, well, we need to change the name. Let's call ourselves Source to Market. And then we were like the source. I was like, let's just promote that we're the source of talent so the phone rings. We don't have to pick the phone up. We don't have to do what Parker Bridge used to do, bang out the calls. Let's just go to market telling everyone we're the source of talent. Come and talk to us. So that was an in-between one where we quickly pivoted to S2M Digital because we built the sales team at News Limit in 2021, I think that was. And then mobile came in and, we started doing a lot with agency work and all the big publishers. So, that brand's evolved from being, Sam's business in sales to marketing to News Limited saying, you're a digital recruiter. And then, we just competed against the likes of Mitchell Lake and Sally Mills in those days. And there's not a lot of many of them still around, but so we're sort of 18 years old, that brand.
It's amazing.
I'm really proud of it. It's great. It's good. And Sam's still in there driving it really hard. So without her, the business would not be alive.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, mate, we're going to come back to your entrepreneurial journey in a moment, but you just made a statement that I have to pick up on, which I find fascinating. You said, when you were talking about Parker Bridge, that Mike Hewitt, your exact words were, Mike Hewitt couldn't work with me, obviously, was the word that you used. What do you mean, mate? And I know that this was many years ago, and I'm sure you're different.
From the other side of the room, right? Like I was 30 years of age, heaps of energy, drinking most nights, waking up hungover, getting back into the office. going hard on the phone, not listening to anyone, driving. Of course, I mean, I built that business in 2 years from three staff to 33 staff. I took a contractor book from three people to like 100, and it was 2 years of hard energy. And Mike just like, so Mike was a brilliant manager, Mike knew how to build people. Mike's like, it's all right. We've now got 100 contractors. I built all the divisions. I did the technology. So we set up media. We set up this, that, and the other. I mean, the funny thing was, I remember the interview with Steve. He's like, come back in next week, when I started, and tell us what, during the training, actually, come in and tell us what sort of recruitment you want to do. And I just came in and I said, I want to do IT. And that him and Mike laughed at me. Like, what are you laughing at? They said, we're an accounting recruitment firm, David. I said, yeah, well, that's stupid, isn't it? IT's taking off, mate. Have you ever heard of Y2K? There's a whole thing going on, the internet. Have you heard of the internet? Emails? Like, we were still on fax machines. We didn't have emails at Parker Bridge, right? And they said, okay, cool. So that's when they said, well, David, you do accountants in IT. And I was like, good, that's smart. At least I'll be able to get in a growing sector. So I did that, and then I pivoted into media because I got onto, somehow I fell into Sony Music. That I did that deal with Sony Music, which is a cracker, but helped them build all their divisions. But what was your question, Mike Hewitt? Yeah, Mike trained me. Mike trained me. Mike also taught me that being a manager is different to being a super biller. And Mike taught me about, which I'd never really, I should have listened and learned. I mean, I think Dave McKillop learned from Mike a lot more than I did. Dave was intelligent and smart and took it on what Mike taught him. I was too arrogant and thought I could rule the world, right? But Mike was a brilliant manager. And then Mike just realized that he had a great business and didn't need too many entrepreneurial people that might upset the apple cart. And look what Mike did. I mean, he sold his business for millions of dollars. He built that contractor book to 200 or 300. And, he's a very successful recruitment manager as well.
20 years on, Dave, obviously that energy that possibly Mike Hewitt struggled with back in the day is clearly still with you. Where does that energy come from, mate? Because you're going to be the same, similar vintage to me. How do you keep going, mate?
It's just exciting. Like, you just, if you can wake up and go, this is what we're going to do today, and then you can achieve it. And it's like just little things. Driving my son to work, and he says things to me like, gee, Dad, you just, that phone, because he listens to my phone calls. Yeah. Right? I'm driving him to school. We're in Brisbane, so I'm driving him at 7:30. It's 8:30. Example this morning, got a phone call from one of the investors that said, David, really proud. That speech you did at the wedding on the weekend was great, And so then my son hears me talk about what we're doing with investments. And then I hang up from the investor and about to drive him to school. And that's, your son looks at me and goes, Dad, you're right. That speech was amazing. You were so good. And I can't believe that so-and-so said this and so-and-so, So just little things like that, right? I mean, that's more personal. But for me, the business, knowing, for example, that ASR business in Newcastle, that DSI business in Sydney, and S2M's 18 years old, just love it. I can walk around and I just think this is brilliant. So got to keep going, right? And where's the energy come from? I think it just comes from, being excited about what you do and making sure that you wake up every day with your plan set, but plan set to make sure things that you're doing you enjoy. If you don't enjoy it, you won't have the energy, right? And it'll die. So everyone laughs that I'll be still doing recruitment or involved in recruitment industry when I'm 60, 70, 80, right?
And there's no reason why we can't. There was a time. It was definitely a time when I thought recruitment was a young man's game. But I think it evolved so much that there's no reason why old farts like you and I can't kick around for another 10, 15 years.
And you know why? I reckon it's because the younger kids are so mature now, right? When I was, when we built Parker Bridge, we had all these 23, 24, 25-year-olds. I don't think they were as mature as the ones are now, right? These kids that work for us now that are 25, I just associate myself with them as if they're 50 years of age like I am.
They're savvy.
They're intelligent. They're mature. And they, even if they go, DJ's an old bloke, we still get on with each other, right? So which helps and which will keep me in recruitment and keep me young and energized and talking to people like you once a year, Pete.
mate, Wait, do you identify as a recruiter or a businessman or an entrepreneur? What box do you put yourself into?
Look, you know, so the entrepreneur word just makes me cringle.
Cringe,
but because,
right?
like, I actually studied entrepreneurship at university. That was my major, right? Back in, you know, about 24 years ago, whenever it was. So it's 20 longer than that. Anyway, so yeah, look, I class myself as someone that builds businesses, creates businesses, promotes them, and takes risks to do that, and uses capital in an effective way to return a profit to investors. So you would call that an entrepreneur, yes. You know, recruitment, love it, but I'm no good at it, Pete. You know, there's plenty of people who are better than me at it. And what was the other word you said? Recruiter?
Businessman.
Businessman, yeah. I'm a businessman, mate. I always wanted to be a businessman. My grandma was a businesswoman. So,
yeah, you know, what did she do?
She started a dress shop, first of all, and then she fell into owning a hairdressing salon called Vanity Fair, which at the time it closed was Australia's oldest run family hairdressing business. It had run for like 70 years of time. And my mum retired, so they just closed it down, sadly.
Mate, that would explain why you've always got such impeccable hair, mate.
Yes, Fidel Sassoon has had a say in the way I wear my hair.
All right, cool. So if you look back through the course of your life, because most people struggle to start one recruitment company, right? You know, procrastination and fear of risk and everything gets in the way. And if you take the plunge and take one and start one recruitment company, fair play to you. But you've done it a few times. Would you say, if you look back through the course of your life, do you think you've created those opportunities? Do you think they've fallen into your lap? Do you just think you've had a germ of an idea and opportunity has come knocking? Do you think you're a bloody lucky bloke, or do you think you have made your own luck?
I think, you know, the whole S2M thing was a little bit of luck. It was timing, right? It was we were doing some sales and marketing recruitment. I wanted to drive hard down the mobile space, and then News Limited knocked on the door and gave us an opportunity there, and Sam filled like 50 roles in 12 months there and built a digital sales team. And then we were known as these people that could build sales teams in digital space, right? Which meant all the publishers came to us, which meant we then pivoted into the agency land because they wanted to sell into publishers. So I was lucky there, but, you know, like ASR, DSI, starting those two businesses was not luck, right? It was thought through. It was premeditated. It was. I wrote down all the mistakes I made at S2M on a list on a long list, which ended up being like 60 or 70, 67 things that I would change at ASR. And, you know, the rest is history with that business. It's a quite a successful, well run, easy for me to oversee. It's a great business, right? And same with DSI. I don't have a lot to do with those businesses. I'm the major shareholder, founder, and chairman, or MD, or group MD, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, they're run by successful managers that I was potentially lucky to find in that sense.
You remember when you wrote that list of 67 items, clearly the biggest mistakes would have been the first ones that you wrote down. Can you remember what any of those were that you learned at the S2M days in the early days?
Absolutely. The first one I wrote down was, you know, was my lesson about Mike Hewitt, you know, what Mike was. Mike was a manager, you know. So I'm a super builder, right? I'm a promoter. You call it entrepreneur, you call it whatever you want. I'm a builder. I'm a, you know, a lot of people, I can pull people behind me in the wake, right? So the first thing I wrote down was hire someone that can manage people, because I know I can build the business. I can throw all the work at these people, but that business would not be successful without a very centered, intelligent manager that can build, that can take the energy that I'm giving them and run it successfully within that team, right? So, and same with S2M, right? You know, we've got a great manager there as well. So, you know, without having, like, you know, Brett pulled us through some of the worst trading histories everyone's had, right? Like the COVID issues were amazing, and then we came out of that and just was. They went so hard, right? And that's just being able to have that manager. He's a brilliant manager, right? He runs a very successful desk as well. So, But yeah, look, you know, I think I created a lot of luck in the early days, most definitely, Pete. But I think as you get older and you write those learning lessons down, you then the luck's not created. But, you know, you then, you know, these businesses we've thought through and we've created them, and they're BMW fast starters, both of those businesses. So, you know, that's where we want to be. That's how we're going to.
When you start something, Dave, how do you know it's going to work? Do you just have this like innate self belief? Failure is not an option, kind of thing.
Yeah, look, but don't worry. I'm happy to fail and shut things down, and I've done that. You know, S2P, we shut down. That was done. I had another business once called Fundex, which was funding invoices mainly into the recruitment industry, similar to your major sponsor, A Positive, and the boys there know me. But we had Fundex. I couldn't end up raising enough debt. I shut it down. But you know, what was the question, Pete? What was your question?
The question was, how do you know if something's going to be successful?
Oh, well, I love that question. You know why? Because I remember the day where I sat with Sam once in the our first office was in Australia Square, George Street. I remember the day sitting with Sam, just looking at it, going, you know what? This business is here. It's staying even without me running it. And she's like, yeah, I know. This is real. And you get that feeling when you know, wow, it doesn't rely on you picking the phone up anymore. You know, like I created the accounts, I chased the debts, I did all that. But then when you realize, okay, Miha's doing accounts, we've got a reception answering the phone, you know, I've got a team of six or seven people, you know, the brand's out there, the phone's ringing in, and I just walk away, you just go, wow, you've got that right. So that feeling is awesome. Yeah. And you never know that till the time comes, right? And so, you know, we were BMW fast starter in the GFC 2008. I don't think Sam and I had that conversation in 2009, right? Yeah. We started that business in 05. It was a 4-year, wow, we know we've got something now. You know, ASR was a bit quicker than that. DSIs have been a bit longer, but watch this space on that. There's some big things happening there on the back of the contracts we've just won with the state government. So, and then we can talk about the big business later because it's a little bit different to recruitment. But yeah,
very different.
You get that feeling, Pete, you know when you've done it, and that's what keeps driving you, you know? And then for me, I'm like, what's the next one, right? Now that's set. But you don't want to go off too quickly and try to start the next one because some of them can get affected by that. And that's really what happened with S2P. We thought we had the right manager in place. He thought he was right for us, and it just didn't work. So coming into COVID, we decided to close that brand down and roll that into S2M. But
that's what we do, right? Well, mate, there you go. So you just looked at the screen and you said, and then you can start thinking about the next one. And let's talk about the next one, because the next one is left of field. It's outside of the recruitment industry, right? Can we call it a passion project, Dave? Does it fall into the passion project, or did you just see an opportunity, or is it a bit of both? Tell us what it is.
No, it was definitely a passion project, but it's a pretty serious passion project, Pete, because it came down to I was facing a major dilemma. My father had passed away, and then pretty quickly three close mates passed away. And I'd been battling alcohol for like 30 years. And, you know, I just decided I needed to stop drinking alcohol. So about 6 weeks into it, I realized this to stop drinking alcohol is bloody hard. And if I was putting so much energy into it, I was like reading these quicklit. I was part of these groups. I was researching everything. I was, you know, okay, I've got to do exercise so I don't drink. I can't do those lunches. I've got to stay away from this. I've got to do this. I was like, I said to myself, if I'm going to do it, because I was on a 1-year no beer challenge with a friend, I was like, if I'm going to do this for 12 months, I'm going to turn this passion into a business. Because we all know if you're passionate about something, you want to wake up every morning at 5 a.m. and start work, you'll create something successful. And, you know, I started that vision when I started that vision in March 2020. And, you know, it's only really maybe this morning when I had that call from the investor this morning, driving to work with the son, I'm just like, yeah, this one's already here now. I've got that feeling, Pete. I've got the feeling
So the feeling that we spoke about, you got that this morning.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's so amazing. When you get early stage investors that then follow through on each round and come back in again, when you've had the big supermarkets call you 3 days ago, when we're not approaching them, they're approaching us all the time, and it's just, yeah, I've got the feeling with this one. So this is the benefit.
So for the purposes of context, because we haven't actually said it out loud yet, they've started a non-alcoholic beer called Beneficial Beer.
Yeah.
Where is the business today, Dave?
Okay, so today we're doing a capital raise. We're rolling out into Coles Liquor, into their First Choice Liquor stores, their Liquorland stores. 6 months ago, we did a national deal with Aldi for Dry July. We're one of their first non-alcs in the country. We have three beers. We have a lager, which is Australia's most awarded non-alc lager on the market. It's only been selling for really 12 months, but it's won more awards than any other non-alc lager on the market. We've got a pale ale that's a multi-award winning as well. And our dark ale has recently won silver medals as well. So, you know, that people ask about beer. You ask where it's at today. There's three things in beer, Pete. One's the product. Two is the distribution, and three is the marketing. So I actually went sober in 2020, tried to find a brewer in Western Sydney in 2020 during COVID to help me do this. They all laughed at me. So I moved the family to Brisbane in 2021 to study brewing for 6 months. Right. Studied brewing for 6 months. I then went and raised 275 grand in a WhatsApp chat in 24 hours or 48 hours, banked it. And then rang my creative director, who's my business partner, and said, Matt, we've got the money. He goes, well, we better start brewing. I'm like, Matt, it's not that easy. So I approached Bruce Peachy, who I knew of, and he did 20 years at Tui's and then 10 years at Blue Tongue Brewery, which sold for $500 million. And he was consulting to Asahi and Kieran for the last 10 years. I approached Bruce online via LinkedIn as a good recruiter. Hi, Bruce, I'm Dave Jackson. I met you at Blue Tongue years ago. You know, I've got Matt Johnson on board creating the brand for me. We couldn't find a brewer. I moved the family to Queensland. I studied brewing. I now know brewing. Mum said, you know, you can't raise money till you know how to make beer. So I've done that, ticked that box, raised the money. I need a brewer. So Bruce said, what beer do you want to make, David? No. Bruce said, here's my phone number. Give me a call tomorrow. I rang Bruce. It's a very short conversation. Bruce doesn't say much. He's a very quiet gentleman. But when Bruce talks, you listen. He said, David, what sort of beer do you want to make? I said, I want to make a lager. I can drink at Ty's Pub on a Friday. No one knows I'm not drinking alcohol. He goes, great. I made one of those 6 years ago. I've got the recipes. I've got the technology. It's in a warehouse. We just need to bring it up from Adelaide. Let's do it.
Wow.
And then the rest is history, right? So we've got the product. We've just nailed distribution by just being in the market and just be sitting here and me posting stuff online. All the three supermarket chains have come to us. So we've got distribution. We're in that. We've got national distribution in Paramount as well now, finally, which is great. And ALM's coming. So we've got the distribution. And now we just need to tweak the marketing and pour some petrol on to grow that business. But you know, as you know, we've sort of raised about 500 or 600 now in this crowdfunding raise, which has been an amazing experience.
Which is happening right now, correct?
Absolutely. Happening right
when
now.
When does that end, Dave?
It ends on the 10 days time, which will be
10 days time.
Is that the 20th of November?
Could be.
Yeah. I'll tell you the exact date. It ends on Thursday, the 20th of November at 10 p.m.
No, hang on a minute, Dave. It's the 20th of December today. I think it's the 30th of November. I saw one of your flyers.
Sorry. 10 days time, 30th of November.
Yeah. Okay. All right, cool. Well, mate, and I'm an investor. I'm one of your mini investors.
Yes.
You and I had a conversation.
That's been sensational. Opening it up to the crowd, Pete, was the best thing we could have ever done. So there's 130 people that have just come through as investors that we're going to look after. We've got a new mantra. And being the promoter that I am, the new mantra is sell beer, make money, pay dividends. Sell beer, make money, pay dividends. We had some backlash early on. Oh, all these beer companies all going out to raise money from the crowd, right? There's a big negativity thing out there about crowdfunding. Yeah. In the old days, crowdfunding was come in, buy some shares in my business. I'll give you a T-shirt and free beer, right? We don't do that. We've given you ordinary shares alongside every other shareholder, right? So you get the share, whatever rights the other shareholders have got, you have as well. But I'm going to turn the apple upside down, not only on the beer industry, we're doing that with the non-alc, but we're going to do it on the crowdfunding. I'm going to pay a dividend. I'm going to pay shareholders a dividend.
Yeah. Okay.
Watch
Good.
This space.
Good.
Good.
Will you ever go into the alcoholic range?
So, Pete, and this is, so we got a phone call from Audi saying the beer's really good. We're going to do a deal with you. Take it, you know, do what you want. Put Stone Cold Lager in or create your own brand. So we created our own brand, the Lowdown Lager, and we put that in Audi. At the same call, when we signed the deal, blah, 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 the gentleman I was talking to said, you know what? The CEO thinks this is one of the best beers he's had, but do you reckon we could get the alcohol in it? Like, be nice to have, you know? So we're like, we actually make a mid-strength beer. That's what we do. We make mid-strength beer, then we remove the alcohol. So for us to give Aldi the beer with the alcohol in it is really easy.
Yeah.
So the question is yes. The answer is yes, we will be doing a mid-strength with a low, with a non-alc. It'll be a world first. You'll actually be able to try the original beer with the non-alc beer. So it'll be a moderation pack. It'll be to educate some customers. And, you know, Aldi want to do it with us, so we'll be doing it with them. It's still beneficial by nature because it's a mid-strength beer. And we won't be doing double hop, triple hop, creamy Mars bar IPAs. You know, we'll just stick with our three core range beers as mid-strengths that everyone knows. You have one can. It's, you know, it's like one standard drink. So, and it really aligns well with my journey as well, Pete.
Yeah.
Because when I went sober for 445 days, and yeah. it was the 446th day that the boys at the brewery that I was doing, it was at Queensland TAFE, and we were brewing beer, and they're like, mate, you need to start tasting the beer you're making, otherwise there's a whole 6 months of wasting. So, yeah, so then I realised that after 445 days, I'd kicked that really bad habit I had of alcohol. And now I'm so grateful that I did that time off. I've got a really good relationship with alcohol now, and it does revolve around mid-strength beer, and it does revolve only drinking mid-strength if I'm at a pub on tap. So there's no alcohol in my house still. I mean, that's another story. But that's back to your recruiter's wagon, which is so good, and the WhatsApp chat we're in is so valuable. And I hope there's a lot more recruiters join it after this conversation.
I hope so, mate. I hope so. I was going to ask, one of your beers has got the name, the word wagon in it, right?
It is. We have the Wagon Driver's Pale Ale. So it's the...
Can I lay any claim to inspiration there, Dave?
No.
Oh, come on, mate. Just say yes. Just make me feel better about myself.
Of course you can, Pete. Yes, we took and we put it, you know, we retrofitted it. But yeah. No, that's Matt, our creative director. He's a genius when it comes to copywriting. Yeah. So you can, you know, still be on the wagon, you know. Rain the wagon driver's pale ale.
Are you enjoying being part of the brewing community more than recruitment? Let me rephrase that. When you started your recruitment businesses back in the day and you had that level of excitement that you clearly have for the brewing industry today, which one captivated you the most?
Oh, recruitment for sure. Absolutely. And I'm not just saying that. The brewing industry is interesting. And as I explained to my son last week on another conversation with him is that I'm disrupting this brewing industry, and not only are we disrupting it with a non-alc beer that's alcohol removed, we use special technology to remove the alcohol. Not only are we disrupting it that way, but I reckon I'm disrupting the people within it, right? So I'm hiring the team that I'm hiring and that I'm putting around me, not all of them have alcohol experience, right? Okay. And I'm finding that dealing with the alcohol industry is not as easy as I've thought it was going to be. And it's funny, I've gravitated towards people like Mark Cowie, heads up Tribe. He's actually is limited. Paul Weaving, heads up another sales team. He was ex Fairfax, I think, right? So they're two of the best people in the industry. They return your calls. They talk to you sensibly. They know that you're fast-paced. They're happy with you. You know, they're not like, who's this dickhead doing non-alc? They're like, oh, he's an entrepreneur. He's helping people slow down their drinking. Let's work with him, you know. And then Riley Martin, our head of sales now, like, she's from the industry, but she's an unbelievable person. There's not many people like her at all. So, you know, I'm finding the industry, I'm gravitating to people that are more like where I've come from.
Yeah, I was going to say, don't any three of those people sound like they'd make good recruiters.
Yes, they were. They would. They absolutely would. But you know, the industry, the beer industry is interesting, and I think it's because of alcohol. So, yeah, I think that's another conversation, Pete.
That's a conversation for another time. So, what next for you, mate? I know your plate is already very, very full.
Yeah.
But where do you see yourself in a few years' time? What will have been, if everything goes according to plan, what will your life look like in a few years' time?
I'd say within the next 12 months, we'll have someone from the beer industry running Beneficial Beer Co. You know, we'll have the non-out national in you know 3,000 to 4,000 outlets, and potentially have a mid-strength range that is happening under someone else's guidance, but simply because the beer is so good that Bruce Peachey produces, right? So, you know, where will I be? I mean, I'm hoping I'll just still be having those weekly meetings with each manager, you know, monthly board meetings. And I would actually love to be in a brewery with my hard hat on, my boots on, and not looking at an email or not touching a phone and just creating stuff, right? And just helping the boys do the brewing, like moving stuff and cleaning tanks and packing boxes and, you know, filming packing lines and all sorts of stuff. So that, you know, in a few years' time, if I could be in our own brewery, I'd be a really happy man. That'd be great fun. You know, if we don't go down the path of building our own brewery and we continue to contract brew, then, you know, I'll still have that office job, which I'm trying to get out of. And you never know, Pete, I might have a farm doing something.
Yeah.
Watch this space.
You could grow your own hops and barley and all that shit.
I didn't say that, Pete. Corruption that they had there. Like, it's, you go into these businesses that are just so old and are so stuck in their ways, and I don't think they have got, like, because I was on the board of Sydney Angels for 4 years, right? I saw so many businesses pitch. Yeah. And you know about it, and it's all like start something, iterate. But there's disruption. The hops has been disrupted already in Australia, and there's a girl growing some amazing hops. But yeah, you know, maybe I might be a farmer in a few years, Pete.
Watch this space.
I certainly will be sailing, though, so you never know. I could be stuck in the ocean somewhere, mate, but I'll be happy to talk to you when I'm on the high seas.
Yeah, on your giant phone. All right, mate, well, that's a good place to leave it. Mate, thank you so much for talking us through your recruitment and indeed entrepreneurial journey in such vivacious fashion.
No, I just wanted to add, more than happy to help you. Like, I know we did some mentoring a few years ago with some of your guys, but you know, I'd love to throw back to the industry whenever you need me, Pete.
Thank you, mate. No, thank you. I appreciate that. In fact, I'll just put that out to the listeners. Anybody needs his help or some beneficial beer, give them a shout. Now, mate, we tend to close these new episodes with a little bit of advice, a bit of an advice section, which is designed to give back to the industry and to anybody who's listening. And what I've done, I've created the profiles of four hypothetical recruiters at different stages of their career. And I just want you, the guests, to give them advice, if you don't mind.
Okay.
Number one, what advice would you give to somebody starting out in their first recruitment job next week, their very first gig?
Very first gig. I think they need to ensure that it's, so if you've done the interview, make sure it's the right job to go to, but you really need to commit to it. You need to put your head down, 3 years minimum. And the best advice I can give you is work those extra hours, work that 7 to 9 and work that 5 to 7, because the other recruiters aren't doing it. They're not picking the phone up, calling the Seek ads that replied overnight, getting them exclusive, and then ringing the client at 9 o'clock. No other recruiter's doing that. That other recruiter's still cruising into work at 9 o'clock. You've already got the candidate and you've pitched them into the client. The deal's done. It's those 7 to 9 in the morning and 5 to 7 in the afternoon is my advice. If you're starting out in recruitment and you stay at the one company for 3 years, you will be a very successful recruiter.
Love the 3 years bit, and I love the committing bit, because so many people throw in the towel when they shouldn't. In fact, that leads me very nicely onto my second question. Something that I see way too often, Dave, and it kind of breaks my heart. I see talented young, intelligent people throw in the towel in after 18 months, not even 2 years, because they've had a poor or below average first experience in recruitment, which could be for a multitude of different reasons. What advice would you give to somebody 18 months in who isn't kicking goals like they want it to be, who's thinking about throwing in the towel?
Well, I would probably say to them, you know, go to a Pete and sit down and have a chat. Go to a successful recruiter like a DJ and sit down and have a chat. And then go to an independent advisor who's got nothing to do with recruitment and have a chat. Because there's two ways to go at that stage, Pete. One is, yes, throw the towel in. It's not made for you. Don't kid yourself. Don't listen to your boss who keeps trying to convince you to stay. So get to that process, draw a line in the sand and work and analyze, am I in or am I out? And then if you're in, you need that advice from a DJ or a Pete or an independent person on what you need to change to make it happen. And don't get me wrong, you know, Brett at my business is the best person ever to maintain and manage and mentor those people and take them from that 18 months where you're wrong to being in the industry 5 years and now moved off to another competitor, right? Whereas me, I'm just sorry you'd have to go, right? So you really need to put a line in the sand and work out, if you're in for the right reason, work out what are those things that you need to change to keep you never sitting on that bridge again. Or work out that you're not right and move on to something else. But yeah. I think it really comes down to getting advice, right? You need advice. You need advice either internally from the manager, externally from another entrepreneur or a rec-to-rec who's seen people all the time, and then a totally independent person that's got nothing to do with it who's, you know, another executive in another sort of business that you can get advice from. And then try to turn around what's not working within your desk.
Yeah. Good. Love it. What advice would you give to somebody thinking about going into people management for the first time?
People management, okay. So, you know, I mean, a big thing today we've talked about is that whole Mike Hewitt brilliance, right? He's the brilliance of being a people manager. You got to remember, if you're sitting here today thinking, I'm going to go into people management, why is that? Okay, because I'm a super builder. I've just built 800. My boss said, you got to manage a team, right? Now, Nigel ran a very successful recruitment company, just sold it for $40 million, had three managers with him, right? They all were million-dollar billers, but they had a team of seven people under each of them. Somehow those million-dollar billers could bill and manage a successful team. I've never seen that happen, but Nigel's probably like a Mike Hewitt and can help manage those people and make the environment work. So if I was going into management, you need to understand, are you a super biller or are you a manager? And don't go down the management route because you're the super biller and the boss wants to keep you in the company, right? Negotiate with the boss and just go, man, I don't need to go manage people. I'm just pay me that extra 5%. What's the P&L look like? You're sure you're still making money, are you? I want to make a bit more, great. And just keep driving down that individual path. If you're going down the people management route, then that's because you know you are a manager. You may have been a successful biller, you may not have been, but you're more of a manager and you've got those qualities. Then, you know, my advice to those people is to read as many management books as possible, is to learn from other managers, you know, go and study, work out how Nigel sold his business and how he had those three super billers running that company for him.
What,
you know.
What's Nigel's surname?
Nigel ran, you'll have to come back to me on that one.
All right, I'll stick it in the comments below.
Yeah. Nigel, he's going to kill me not knowing. Barkham from Peregrine.
Oh, of course, yes. Nigel Barcham from Paragon, yeah.
Yeah, 100%, Michael Barcham,
yeah.
He'll kill me for not knowing, but I'm too busy, right? But Knight is an amazing manager. But what I was saying was he had those super billers. Like all of his leaders, he had three leaders. They were million-dollar billers.
Yeah. Yeah. I know one of them. He was a machine, yeah.
Yeah, and it's hard to say bill $1 million and run a team of seven people that are going to bill another five.
Yeah,
but that's what they were doing, and so, you know, if you're going to go down people management, you know, like you just need to know whether you've got the energy to do both, or if you've got the skills to do both, and really look at yourself. Don't get pushed down into people management. Don't go and manage people if the company wants to keep you because you're a super biller.
Yeah,
you know, or don't go into management because the company thinks you'll be good at it because you're actually a nice person. and you talk well and you're this, that, and the other. You're probably not, a good supervillain is not going to respect a nice person. You need, you know, there's something about a manager. I don't know what it is, but Nige had it, obviously, and Mike Hewitt had it. It's that click. I never had it, you know, hence why, you know, I never got to build the big businesses with 20, 30 people, right? Yeah. I've now got staff that are doing that for me. Thank God. Yeah. I found that I wasn't doing well at, Pete, right? And just moved away from it. Like, I moved away from management back in 2009 when I opened up Melbourne. I don't know, Matt Chambers sort of ran Melbourne for us while I was never really there. So, I mean, I did sort of 4 years managing, and then everyone realized I wasn't a manager. And Sam, you've got to get out of here, David. Oh, this business is successful without you. So I knew I wasn't a manager, and that's when I went off and did other things.
Final classic question, mate, and you are very, very qualified to answer this particular question. What advice would you give to somebody thinking about branching out on their own, starting their own recruitment company?
Oh, I would tell them to have a partner.
Yeah, right.
I could not see anyone going out on their own in this world and starting a successful recruitment company. It's just too hard. It's too hard.
You don't see very often, but James Hone from Bluefin, he did it.
Did he without? So he owns the company 100% and he just employed people to help him?
And then, happy to be corrected, but I believe that to be the case. But I agree.
Hang on, Bluefin's 10 years old or something, isn't it?
Or more.
That's what I'm saying. Back then, different story, Pete. Okay. Back then, there wasn't the LinkedIn contracts that are $100,000 a year now. There wasn't the Seek bills that are $200,000 a year, right? I mean, I was paying $20 for Seek ads only a few years ago, right? Now we're paying $150. It's killing us, right? You can't go out and start a recruitment company by yourself today. You can, and you'll be a one-man band of one or two people, whatever. But I stand corrected. An amazing gun will do it, and, you know, people can do it. But today, my advice today from someone who's been in the game for 23 years is find a partner like a Samantha Watts and have a yin and a yang, right? So if you're the one that can set the systems up and manage the business and manage the team, that's great. Have someone that can win all the business. If you're the person that can win all the business, then have the person at home base that can keep the team happy and keep everything going, right? And you'll be able to start a really successful business in this world if you've got that teamwork, right? And that's what I believe now. With my advice to anyone going to start their own recruitment company is have a partner.
I would agree that most successful recruitment companies I see today have got two, sometimes three business partners.
It's a tough space now, Pete, because the market's saturated with guys out there with a mobile phone and a Seek account and a LinkedIn account and doing their own thing and charging, you know, whatever they want, and just, you know, some clients picking up on that and then getting burnt, and then clients going, I'll never use a recruiter again, and then in-house teams, and you go through that cycle all the time, right? But you know, the successful guys now, if you're going to go start, so is latch onto a bigger business, go to them with an idea and say, hey, I want to start this for you, but I want equity, you know?
How do you choose the right business partner, though?
Mate, it's dating.
It's like marriage.
You need to go out with them, Pete. You need to spend some time with them. You need to understand their family. You need to understand what their background is, what their values are, what they do on the weekend, Pete, right? How they handle themselves after a bottle of champagne, pre-dinner drinks, and then we all sit down and the waitress comes around and asks who's drinking what, and how they handle themselves when someone's paying the bill and all of a sudden out comes the dessert wine, right? And then the whiskey, right? So how do they, and are they backing up the next morning to the meeting that you've set, or, you know, are they coming sailing with you? And you know, what are their manners like? So that means if I was doing business with people now, I mean, that's how we choose our people, right? We've always called it the culture couch, right? At S2M, we do the culture couch, and that's like all sorts of different things. But it's basically like, this person's going to be in our life for 10 hours a day. They're going to be part of the culture, right? So, and that's, if I was going to do a business with someone, I'd want to, you know, I mean, like when I first thought I was going to be a promoter like Max Markson, I wrote Max a letter. And then he said, come into my office. And I went into his office and told him I wanted to work for him and I was going to be Australia's biggest promoter. And what I said to him was, I'm going to be Australia's biggest promoter. And when man goes to the moon, they're going to take David Jackson to the moon because I'm going to be Australia's biggest promoter. When they want Australians to pay to go to the moon, they'll have me on their first flight, right? You ask Max, I told him that back in, that was like 1998, I think, when I was sort of just finishing uni and thought I was this and that, right? But yeah, I don't know how I got to talk about that.
We're going to the moon. Dave, thank you so much, mate. That was wonderful.
Thanks
wonderful.
For having me.
It was exciting. It was informative. And it was exhilarating and hopefully inspirational. Mate, as I mentioned earlier, I'm a proud investor of Beneficial Beer. And I'm just curious, when can I expect my first dividend, mate?
June 30 next year, we'll announce one.
Good lad.
July, it'll be front page of the AFR. It'll be like, look at this non-alcoholic business that raised 700,000 or 800,000 from the crowd last year. He's standing true to his word. We're not supposed to say this because ASIC looked down at forecasts, but yeah. I've had a chat to one of my major investors, as I said, over the weekend at the wedding, and he goes, mate, just do it. Go for it. Just go for it. Look at what you need for the next 12 months and work out how much you're going to pay. Pete, it's not going to be millions of dollars in profit that we're paying the dividend, but we will pay a dividend. We want to get into the cycle of paying dividends to our shareholders. We want then the bigger investors to come along and go, we don't need to buy this guy out. We just want to give him money so he grows it because the dividends are going to get bigger.
Love it. Mate, I'm going to cancel this Zoom. I'm going to go into my diary. I'm going to put 30th of June in there and look forward to the cheeky dividends.
Yes, look forward to it.
David, thank you so much, mate. Good luck with everything.
Thanks, Pete.
Thank you, buddy. Take care.
Bye.
And that concludes another episode of Recruitment Journeys. Thank you so much for listening. Hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, it would be awesome and really appreciated if you could like, share, or subscribe, or ideally all three. Again, we don't ask for much at Recruitment Journeys, just a little bit of love. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time for the next episode of Recruitment Journeys.